The Augustin Hosinga Show with your host Augustin Hosinga.
Smack the shit out your bitch ass midget girlfriend, nigga.
Hello there and welcome back to the Augustin Hosinga Show with I, your host, Augustin Hosinga, and this is episode number 752. That is 752 of the Augustin Hosinga Show with I, your host, Augustin Hosinga, and I hope you're doing well wherever this podcast may find you. I hope you are doing swimmingly. How am I? All good, all things considered. I cannot complain. I really cannot complain. All good, all things considered. Had a bit of a quiet weekend for once. Didn't go out, didn't get on it, didn't do much except for just chilling at home, sleeping a bunch, working out a bunch, and sleeping a bunch, actually. Weirdly enough, I think I slept way longer than I probably would want to over the weekend. I'm not sure if that was my body catching up on all those weekends that I stayed up late, doing all sorts of nonsense, working hard, streaming, recording, all this malarkey. I'm not sure what happened, or maybe it's just the balancing of the work and the old content thing, who knows. But this past weekend, God almighty, man, every time I lay down, I just closed my eyes and flipping slept. And then I woke up and it was, you know, however many hours after the fact, and I was like, damn, I wasted another day. But I guess sometimes you have to pay the price with your body. You can, you know, you can do what I do, which is basically burn the candle at both ends, keep on trucking, keep your head down, close your eyes, one foot in front of the other, and hope and pray that your body doesn't catch up. But usually it does. And when it does decide you want to go to sleep, you're going to sleep. There's nothing you can do to fight it, nothing you can do to combat it, nothing you can do to overcome it. When your body decides we're going to sleep, you are going to sleep. So that was a little bit annoying because I had loads of stuff to do, but also I was very refreshed. I'm very recharged. I'm raring to go, and I can't wait to talk to you about some of the topics that I've got here listed. First things first to talk about, really, as a first mention, what's lamer? Being a part of a raving WhatsApp group, right? Like where you kind of meet people to go rave with and you talk about rave culture and all this sort of shit. Or getting kicked out of that WhatsApp group. Like, what's worse? Is it more embarrassing to be a part of a WhatsApp group where you talk about raving and shit? Or is it more embarrassing to get kicked out of that WhatsApp group because you might have sent too many unsolicited, you know, messages late at night, you know, probably high off your brain, drunk or whatever, probably not remembering what you said, and then it kind of got back to the higher ups and they decided, you know what, you're not a good member of our community. You're bringing this place in disrepute. You're making people uncomfortable. You're making people scared. People are like calling their parents, they're calling the police, they're wanting to, you know, reassurance from the mods and the flipping admin of this page, and they want you to leave. Like, what is actually worse? I'm not really too sure. I think it actually is worse joining a group. I think nobody cool or nobody worth knowing, this is really brutal because I'm part of it too. Nobody worth knowing is going to be a part of a WhatsApp group, right? It's going to be a part of a group thing. Like, if anything, you're going to meet those people in real life and then you might get onto the WhatsApp group later on. But still, I never even knew WhatsApp groups were a thing before, like, recently, right? I never even knew that was a thing. But recently, I started to kind of get involved in more of that stuff. But after a while, I kind of got annoyed that all of my notifications will have, like, crazy numbers, like 200 or something, because there's mad people in there talking about shit, innit? And I think it's pretty decent when it's like an event. I think the event ones are really good. Like, there's specific groups where, like, you have events where they'll be like, oh, hey, there's an event happening on the weekend, and they'll make a separate group, and then people who are going on that event can be like, hey, I'm going on my own, I like some company, if you don't mind grabbing a drink before or hanging out, blah blah blah, you can go and hang out. But for me personally, I think you lose a bit of the spontaneity, a little bit of the spark of going out by having all that preparation beforehand. I think if you're going solo dolo to a rave, annoying as it is for a lot of people out there, me personally, I love it. I prefer to go solo dolo. I've been going solo dolo raving since the inception, or since the start of my actual raving journey, to be fair, which is not because, you know, I think I'm cooler than anybody. It's more so because I just don't have any friends. So I had to just make do, and I'm not going to not go. Like, the worst thing for me personally is to not be able to go to something because I don't have friends to go. Like, I think that's a crying shame that you limit yourself not to go to a certain thing just because you got no one to go with. Whether it's to go and, you know, have a fucking burger at this new burger spot, whether it's to go to an art gallery, whether it's even to watch a movie in a flipping cinemas, or the, like, why would you deny yourself that experience just because you got no one else to sit next to you? It doesn't make any sense. Obviously, it'd be beneficial. It'd be more advantageous to have that person next to you. I understand it. But I really do think it's better to go on your own. So, I did start joining these groups and they were pretty decent, but I have to be honest, I didn't really partake in it like actively, like in real life. I didn't really do nothing. And again, I think I just, you know, there's just too much talking on there. Me as well, I just get a little bit like, what's that thing called? I get a little bit complacent. I get a little bit, what's that thing called? I procrastinate a bunch and I don't end up going anywhere. So I wasn't really the best member of those groups anyway, because I wasn't really participating in the, because I think a lot of those groups, they're kind of like real relationships or real friendships, whatever you cultivate in real life, in that in order to take a relationship, it's like meeting someone at work. You meet someone at work that you like, that you vibe with, you have a good time. You get along with, you go to lunch together, you might go to a cup, you know, might get some drinks after work together, and you have similar interests, you share stuff together, you share stuff between each other on Slack or on Teams and shit, and it's all Gucci. The way to take that relationship to the next level is to then invite them to something that's nothing to do with work. That's when you know, okay, you've got a real friend on your hand. And it takes work to do that. It takes both of you people probably having to make compromises and whatever it may be. But usually that's the marker of a relationship, friendship going to the next level. Like, you do something outside of what you usually would do, right? In order to cement that. And it could be anything. It could be just going to fucking central London, having to walk around or whatever it may be. And I think I just didn't do that in that group. So I didn't really have, what's that one called? I didn't really have any goodwill, you know, because I didn't really meet any people in real life. And I don't really, you know, I don't really have any interest to anyway. So, you know, even though I said a lot of things, you know, I didn't really follow through. So my words were like without any sort of like validity or any sort of like, you know, whatever. So it didn't really transpire. But then in the end, to be the same person that's like shitting on these groups and talking like you're better than them groups, and then to those groups to say... But those same groups would say, nah, you fuck off, right? Because you're scaring all the hoes. That's when you know you got problems. Honestly, it made me, at first I was like pissed. I was like, hold on, what the fuck is going on? And I was like, you know what? I get it. I understand. You know what? It's all well and good. But I still would say, for those of you out there who follow me for like raving advice, whatever else I talk about when it comes to clubbing and shit, and you're a bit like me and you're a bit of a solo person, you're a bit of a lone wolf, I really do recommend, as tempting as it could be to go on, because I think Reddit has a group too. Reddit has a couple of groups for people that want to meet up in terms of raving. I'm not too sure if it's like a social thing. I forgot what it is. There's a particular Reddit. I think it's linked to the main techno subreddit. So the main techno subreddit, the main Berghain community Reddit, they all have an adjacent subreddit that you can use to meet people. And I'm sure there's a Discord. I'm sure there's other WhatsApp groups and shit. As tempting as those are, I really do implore you, especially if you're a young woman, I think it's really important to do so, because, you know, there's always guys on there that are going to jump on you and shit. I think it's really important to just try and cultivate those relationships in real life. And it's not that hard, honestly. It really is easy. All you need to do is like get talking to somebody in a queue on the way to go to the toilet, on the way to waiting for the toilet cubicles, talk to somebody in a smoking area. Like, legitimately, like, I'm quite a striking individual when I'm going out, right? I've got a massive head. I'm tall, I'm black and shit. I probably don't look like any other raver that goes out and shit, because, you know, they all look like a certain type and shit. I probably don't fit into that archetype, but I will ragger walk up to people in a smoking area and just say hi. Like, hey, what's up? Do you know what I mean? Like, are you enjoying the night? Anybody here you're looking to see? Where did you come from? It's your first time here? Like, I'll ragger just say that. And again, it doesn't work all the time. Sometimes that conversation started, honestly, lead balloon things, and people definitely give you the vibe of like, hey, fuck off, I don't want to talk to you. But it's worth a punt. And I think usually for me, I've had better luck cultivating a community, a friendship, a link, somebody to go raving with next time, a drug buddy, whoever it is, doing that than any other way. And I've also remembered that I think what I'm going to do going forward, because I think I mentioned it beforehand, is that I sometimes kill the interaction by always going for the Instagram, you know, like, because I feel like, I don't know, I want to, sometimes I'm a bit like a child when it comes to, and I think that probably is to do with my lack of friends and shit. I don't really have a lot of experience in terms of like that sort of like chat, you know, as good as this is, you know, as good as I can talk into a microphone and rant and ramble, it's not the same thing as having a conversation with an actual human being, you know what I mean? Because this is pretty one way. I'm just fucking talking shit into a mic. You're just listening. You're basically forced to listen if you listen to me. Do you know what I mean? There's no like back and forth. But I think when it comes to a conversation in a club, sometimes I can get so excited and so amped. Oh my God, we're having this communication. We're having this conversation. We're clicking. We're connecting. We like the same things. Oh my God, you saw that thing on Instagram. I saw that thing on Instagram. And I get so excited. And again, it's nothing to do with boys. It's nothing to do with girls and shit and hooking up at all. It's just I get so excited that I just run for the fucking number. Or I run for the Instagram ad. And I personally think running for the Instagram ad without it happening organically or naturally can sometimes kill the conversation, if that makes sense. And I know it makes sense in my head, because I remember there was a time when I was into all that PUA stuff, right? Like pickup artist stuff. And back in the day, there was like a term for it where you don't rush for the close, don't rush for the number. You kind of let the kind of the conversation go as is. Like you kind of play a bit of tennis with a person, right? You're going back and forth and you don't just get too excited. Because sometimes in life, I've had it played times before, especially if it's somebody that you're trying to hook up with, sometimes the actual beauty and the actual amazingness of that experience is just that conversation. It doesn't need to go anywhere else. And I've been guilty of trying to like, you know, chase that moment or try to relive it or chase that dragon, right? I've been very guilty of it, especially in my past when I was, on Facebook a lot. My Facebook at one time had like over 5,000 people on it. I deleted it, obviously, because it got too crazy, but I legitimately had like 5,000 people plus as friends on it. And that was mostly because I added literally everybody I went to uni with, everybody I went to college with, loads of primary school people, and then every single nonsense interaction I had outside with random person, add me on Facebook. So it just got a bit too crazy. But I think the reason why I did that is because I wasn't comfortable with just living in a moment. I couldn't just sit and enjoy that chat in a smoking area with some random dude from Latvia who's talking to me about his job, who's talking to me about his wife and blah 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 and why he's here in London. I had to kind of like, you know, I couldn't just like live with it. And sometimes, who knows, maybe I would have got his Instagram later on at the bar when I bumped into him again later. Maybe I would have never got it. But because I'm chasing it, sometimes kills interaction. So I've kind of come to that realization that I just need to kind of let things live or let things be as they are, kind of thing. Because that's also really important, because the last thing you want is to be that person, which I've, again, been guilty of, where because you have a good interaction one day while you're in the fucking buzz of a high and stuff, you think that is reflective of the relationship you have with that person, like forever and ever, when it's not. Maybe they were just high and they couldn't sleep and they're just like tapping around the phone talking to you, but you're thinking, oh my God, this is my friend. It's like, not really your friend. You know what I mean? Once they're sober and they've got around their real friend, suddenly you're not their friend anymore. It's sort of like the analogy I use is like, you remember when you're at work and like you're hanging out with your like work buddy, like the person that you like the most, right? And then one day your work buddy, their actual real friends come out, and you see how quickly they change. They like completely start ignoring you. You don't exist anymore when their real friends come around. That's kind of how it feels like when you're raving sometimes. You get people's digits, you get people's Instagrams and stuff, and you start talking, you feel like they're like your friend. And it's like, not really, because when Monday comes, when Tuesday comes, and their actual real friends come around, suddenly you don't exist anymore. So you have to kind of keep that in mind. But I did find it utterly hilarious, that whole flipping group situation. But again, understandable. Again, I think if you are trying to get into the scene, trying to get into the fucking, you know, trying to be a part of the little scene that exists out there, you're probably better off just doing things, whether it's like throwing a party, whether it's attending events IRL, talking to people IRL, as opposed to doing the whole group thing. Because I don't know, I found it a lot, you know, as much as I obviously misstepped with some of my actions, I did find there was a lot of talking, you know, a lot of talking, not much of doing and shit. and maybe it doesn't work for most people. I think most people could benefit from just, because we don't do it in a lot of our lives, you know what I mean? In a lot of areas of our lives, we don't really go out of our way to, because I've said it before, like, it's really difficult to make friends when you're an adult. Like, over the age of probably like 22, it's very hard to find new friends, especially if you don't have a hobby. Like, if you have no hobbies, you know, where you have to meet other adults or you have to interact with other adults, it's very difficult to meet them. So I feel like clubbing is a easy way to do it. Like, why not? And not everybody in goes clubbing is drunk. Not everyone that goes clubbing is high. So why not take advantage of it and just, you know, extend your arm out and say hi to somebody and see where that goes. And I think you owe it to yourself to try and do it the hard way, which is obviously doing it in person. It's the more difficult way to do it. I swear to God it is. But it really is beneficial in the long term, because it allows you to kind of get over that, you know, weird social thing that we all have. It's also really risky too. There's that kind of risk reward thing going on. But I also think, like I said, the majority, 99% of my interactions I've had in clubs that have kind of been solid have been because they're, no, 99% of my friendships or like people that I know and shit from club land have been real life. All of them. Very rarely have there been, like, maybe a couple. I think I met people. Actually, big up my guy Matt Little. I went out with a couple times before, so big up him. I can't think of anybody else who I really kind of met within that raving kind of scene that was, you know, legit, and we kind of had, you know, bag and banter and whatever maybe. So I think in general, probably, you know, prioritize IRL events as opposed to WhatsApps. But if you are doing the WhatsApps as well, you know, code of conduct, all that sort of shit, follow that sort of stuff, wherever it may go. But whatever you can do, whatever you can do. Also, I was thinking about that, looking online. I was checking Fold for the recent events coming up because I wanna have a bit of a boogie. So I was thinking, you know what? Maybe I should go to the Unfold happening this weekend. I'm not really too sure if I'm going to be on it or not. There's a transmissions event happening, actually, with Vlada, DJ Melgi, who I'm a big fan of, Specky Webu, Carl H, and Everson. Who's that? Eversins playing as well. And then we've also got a Future Shock event happening next week. But then the big one I was thinking about is this Avalon Emerson event happening in Fold on the 16th of March. If you check Fold, they've got 1,300 people have clicked interested on their events thing, right? I know the events thing is a little bit, you know, it's a hard metric to actually read. I think they sent an email recently to a lot of the RA Pro account users that they're going to change this. Actually, I think this now accounts for, like, I think across all social, I don't know, they changed some of the metrics behind it. I won't even try and get into it. But regardless, it's a high amount, right, of people that said interested. And last time I checked, the tickets have been sold out for a hot minute, like maybe a month. So big up Avalon Emerson. Like, Avalon Emerson has got a fucking, yeah, exactly, see, still sold out. Avalon Emerson has got a crazy following. Like, Avalon Emerson presents 9,000 dreams, 16th of March on Fold, and it's still sold out on obviously on RA tickets. I'm sure you can get some tickets on TicketSwap. I'm sure on a day, as always, you know, there's no, I don't think I can think of a single rave that was ever sold out completely. I can't think of one. Even at Fold, I can't think of one. Maybe the only one I can think of that happened in Fold might have been like a, what's that? I forgot what their name is. It don't matter. But in general, I'm just surprised and shocked and just taken aback that her ability to sell that many tickets, especially this far ahead. So big up Avalon Emerson. Incredible to see. I hope this isn't any tricks involved. I'm sure there is, you know, having been a former promoter myself, I'm sure there's some little tricks you can do where you put out a certain allocation before a date and then you sell those out. You leave it sold out so it creates demand and then you release another allocation after. I mean, I'm sure there's some fugazi things going on and there's always tickets available on the door. I understand that thing. But if this is true and this is accurate and all the pre-sale tickets are sold, wow, amazing. Big up Avalon Emerson. The lineup is really good as well, to be fair. Main room lineup, you've got Avalon Emerson, Roy Perez, who I'm a big fan of, Amelia playing, and then in the steam room you got Chris Cruz and Reese Spooner also playing. So it's an absolutely barnstorming lineup, don't get me wrong. Very, very good, very, very, very good lineup, especially for London. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people turning out to it. But to have an event like this sold out for a month straight is really says a lot about her pulling power. So big up Avalon Emerson. And and I'm really can't wait to actually experience that event sometime very soon. But looking at the list of lineups, actually, it's not that stacked actually so far. Coming up at Fold, there's a Young Marker event happening as well on the 22nd of March. That'll probably be pretty decent. There's Chaos Presents Chris Baja. That'll be pretty decent. There's a Cartilus event happening in March. There's Origins with Katama playing all night. Oh, 1,300 attending on that one. Is that sold out too? Katama playing Origins. Origins have been putting on some sick nights in London, by the way. They go to every venue around London. They don't really discriminate. Whatever venue has a slot, they'll put it in. This event's on a Thursday. Interesting. Okay. There's a Thursday event happening. Katama playing all night long at Fold. Tickets still available. 28th of March. That should be a barnstorming one. 1,300 people are already interested on that one. But apart from that, it's not that stacked, to be fair. I know there's Honey playing as well. Phonics happening very soon. There's a Tech Couture invites DJ the Rooney. I think this is like a Dutch collective, I'm sure. There's a Boudica happening as well on the 30th. There's a Labyrinth against Patrick Mason. That should be pretty decent, to be fair. Maybe I'll check that out as well with Tijana T. She's very underrated, actually. Tijana T is incredibly, incredibly underrated. But, you know, the Labyrinth crew guys, you know, a bit shaky. There's a Malajunta event happening also, 6th of April. That should be pretty fun. And a few others, but you know, it's not the most stacked lineup when it comes to Fold. Maybe there's more surprise happening soon, but not the most stacked lineup so far. But I'm eager to see what happens going forward. Actually, let me just see the Malajunta event. Is that sold out too? Or is that still available? I think that's still available, right? 6th of April. Yeah, still available. Malajunta. I'm sure the tickets are available probably on their website. But yeah, big up Fold. Big up all the groups out there. Big up Fold. Big up all the groups out there. Moving on from that one. Can we please talk about Tokyo Vice? This might be one of the best TV series in recent years. Maybe one of the best. More so because of its ability to open you up to a world that you weren't really aware of. Myself, personally, I'm not that familiar with Yakuza. I'm not really that familiar with Japanese traditions and cultures. I'm not really familiar with Tokyo and as a city, how people navigate around it and, you know, foreigners and all this malarkey. I'm not really familiar with that at all. The only thing I know about Japan in that kind of era of where Tokyo Vice is set in, which is kind of the 90s, 80s going to the 90s, is basically the cars. That's the only thing I'm familiar with. The cars and obviously all the mobile phones. Because in that era, I was obsessed with Nokia. I was obsessed with the Dreamcast. I was obsessed with fucking manga. I was obsessed with, I was obsessed with streetwear, right? All that sort of stuff I was tripping obsessed with. But I wasn't really that knowledgeable about everything else that occurred, especially the criminal underbelly of Tokyo. And again, Tokyo Vice isn't a documentary. I know it's a TV series. You don't believe anything you see. But if this is an insight into what's been happening in Tokyo, it's really interesting in terms of, you know, the role the Yakuza play, in terms of the local politics, in terms of sex, and in terms of like, you know, clubs, bars, music, attitudes between men and women, like so many layered things going on there. But season 2, episode 4, or the season 2, the first episode, the first 4 episodes of it, prime TV. I'm going to give a bit of a spoiler here, just to kind of, in terms of the themes, what's going on. So if you don't want to hear what happened, please make sure you fast forward. But in this particular 4 episodes, one of the things that kind of stood out to me was a line that one of the actors said in the TV series, where they were like, you don't get anything without giving up something. Nothing comes for free, basically. And then later on in the series, one of the main actors in it, this girl that owns like this amazing, you know, club where it's essentially like it's a lounge where, you know, men are treated really well and shit. I don't know how to describe it. It's almost like a brothel, but it's not really a brothel. I don't know what the name of those type of places are called in Japan, but they seem pretty cool, right? Where kind of like, you know, Japanese businessmen go in, they get to be made feel like a king. By these young pretty ladies, they get to drink loads of lovely expensive drinks in this great setting, great music, great ambiance and shit. It seems really cool. And she's running this little place, and obviously the Yakuza have a investment, have a stake in her place. So they take a particular percentage out of her whatever every month. But the one thing that's troubling her the most is that one of the members of Yakuza is incredibly loose. He's a very, very loose cannon, right? Okay, people call me, it's calling the host, if it's hostess bar, right? Okay, big up Machi, hostess bar. So there's one member of the Yakuza who's incredibly reckless and he's scaring all the hoes, basically. And she's getting really worried because he might end up causing irreversible damage to the club, giving her a bad reputation and scaring away all the punters, especially some of the rich guys that she wants to obviously, be regulars at her place. So she decides to do a deal that would basically result in that person never returning back to the club again. And it's basically going really well towards the end. Like they figured it out. This deal's going to go well. This whatever we've got going on. And then out of the blue at the last episode, again, the last episode of that four run, episode four, right at the end, a complete travesty, tragic event happened. And essentially she still gets to keep her club. That guy obviously isn't going to be involved in it because he's no longer alive and other things have happened, but it's come at a great cost. Like a great, 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 great cost. And I swear to God, that series and that episode in particular sat with me for probably a good couple of days after I watched it. I was like, you know what? That is such a clear metaphor for life. Like you really don't get anything without having to give up something. Like something has to give. And I was thinking about it a lot in terms of work and stuff. I was thinking, you know what? Like when it comes to the whole working stuff and hustling and trying to, make something for yourself, like, just think about, forget me, but think about a person just trying to, become a partner at a law firm and stuff. Most likely that woman or that guy isn't going to see their family. They're not going to be able to see their partner. They're probably not hanging around with their extended family too much. You're spending every single minute that you can thinking about the flipping, your ability to become partner at this flipping firm. You're probably every time you have available during the day in the week, you're probably spending it at work. Maybe they're doing 8 to 8 plus whatever meetings you're doing after the fact. And then you finally become, partner of this agency. But then at what cost? Your kids hate you. Maybe your partner resents you. Maybe you got divorced at this point. Maybe your friends have moved on, because that's something I've learned over the years too. I was always like, I kind of romanticized the fact I don't have any friends as like some cool thing. But then when I was ready to have the friends, everybody had already moved on. No one's going to be standing still waiting for you to kind of, be their friend again. They've all kind of got their own lives. They've all got new friends now. People that have sometimes even taken your spot, which is really hard to take. So those things kind of, have always been in my head anyway. So when I watched this episode, I was like, whoa, bro, this resonated with me super hard. But I just think in terms of just the complex nature of like relationships, there's a really cool scene with these guys who are in a gay relationship, and it handles that really, really subtly well. There's a cool situation going on between men and their image of masculinity and all this malarkey and career advancement and all this good stuff, and even the mob as well, like the Yakuza and stuff, and the great consequences are going to come at the end of them when they're kind of going head to head with the police force and shit. It's just a really good series. It's just really well done. And one thing I love about it too, talking about cars, if you're a fan of cars, if you're a fan of cars from the 80s and 90s like I am, maybe even going into the early 2000s, I recommend you check out this series. They have done it to the T in terms of making sure they have cars in there that are really that really kind of relate to the time period of which this series is set. It's done so fucking well, from the fashion to the fucking phones they're using all the time, to the way information gets relayed, the newspaper, the actual physical hard copy of the newspaper playing such a vital role in Tokyo's politics and conversation and shit. It's fucking phenomenal. I really recommend you check it out. If you haven't already, please do. It's called Tokyo Vice. I think it's available on like HBO or one of those places. But again, if you're a person like me and you're on the internet, you'll find a way how to watch it yourself. But I recommend you check it out. Tokyo Vice, absolutely incredible. There's 2 seasons so far. Season 2 has already started, 4 episodes in. I can't wait for episode 5. Episode 4 ended like magical ending, so please check it out if you haven't already. One of my favorite series so far. Moving on from that one, I wanted to talk about this is pretty old news, but I wanted to speak about it quickly. So Hassan Abi, the live streamer, has been in a bit of hot bother recently because he basically said that live streaming is just as difficult as a job as regular working a regular job. It's just as tiring, just as much, even harder, whatever it may be, right? And people really got their panties in a twist, got irate, got mad about it, because rightfully so, it's an idiotic statement to make. So I'm going to play the clip of what he said and then I'm going to react to it myself.
Yes, a real job can be gruesome. A real job can make you very tired, but a real job doesn't suck the soul out of you. You know what I mean? In the same way that 9 hours of streaming absolutely will. So.
One more time.
Yes, a real job can be gruesome. A real job can make you very tired, but a real job doesn't suck the soul out of you. You know what I mean? In the same way that 9 hours of streaming absolutely will.
I don't really understand why these streamers go out of their way to talk about this stuff, because I don't think this is the first time I've heard it. I'm sure I've heard from other people too. They have this same sort of adage, and I think I've heard it from, and again, this is probably a bad example, but I've heard it from the likes of like Wings of Redemption, the DSPs, Darkside Feels. I've heard this common sort of like saying being said a lot to about these guys, and I really don't understand why, because it's a weird one, because a lot of these guys most of those guys I've spoke about, or most live streamers I think of, have had to work regular jobs. There are some live streamers that obviously come from money and shit, but the majority of them have had to work a real job in order to, you know, pursue their dream of making as a YouTuber, making as a Twitch streamer, whatever it may be. Everyone's kind of had to do that. I feel like, personally, I think the majority of us have had to do it. So I feel like if the majority of us have had to do it, regardless if you worked in an office or wherever you worked at, you would know how grueling having a job is that you don't give a fuck about on your mind, on your mental, on your fucking physiology, in terms of your being every day, having to go to a job that you don't give a fuck about and you're doing it solely for the money. It takes something out of you that nothing a 9 hour stream could ever replicate. We should all know that. We've all been in that situation. And it's not like, you know, I don't want to get on here and start saying, oh, I've had harder jobs than you and all this sort of dunking and shit. That's not necessary. But I feel like the majority of people online, the majority of people who make content online, have had to go through that experience where you're legitimately working a job solely for them to pay you at the end of the month so that you can pay your rent, maybe buy new equipment or whatever it may be. But that's all you're doing it for. You don't care about the job. You're not passionate about the product. You don't care about the service. You don't care about the customers. You don't care about anything. You're just doing it for the money. And if that's the case, you should know those type of jobs, forget the actual work that you do being tiring and exhausting. Sometimes it's the people that you work with. And I repeat that again. Forget about how monotonous the job is. The job is horrible. You're picking and packing in a warehouse. You're doing fucking door-to-door sign-ups and shit. You're walking in a call center. You're working in a stock room. You're doing retail, coffee shop, fast food chain. I know, all terrible. But sometimes the jobs aren't even that bad. It's actually the people that you have to work with on a daily basis. It's even made worse if the people that you work with you don't like, or they don't like you. Or you just butt heads, or you don't get along, or there's a culture clash, or there's a fucking age difference that just isn't easy to kind of mend. Those things can be really exhausting. And I've been in situations before. I've worked in places where the job is pretty decent, you don't mind it. But legitimately, the thing that makes your heart sink before you walk into the door is thinking, oh, you're going to see that person that you don't like, the manager that you hate, the fucking supervisor that's got a vendetta against you. These things that you can't really help control or kind of, you know, resolve in any way because you're just a lowly employee. Those things will really fuck with you. And sometimes those things will go with you home. Sometimes you'll be thinking about that shit before you, like, I remember sometimes working certain jobs where you're already depressed Saturday afternoon. Saturday afternoon, you're already depressed. Because you know the evening's coming, you know next day's Sunday, and the following day's Monday, you have to get back to work again. You're already depressed by Saturday afternoon. I remember working those kind of jobs. You're super giddy on a Friday, and then suddenly it's Saturday afternoon, you're fucking depressed because you don't want to get to work. I don't think streaming or making content has ever made anybody feel that way. Unless you're Wings of Redemption and you're a fucking, you know, redacted lolcow who's, you know, allergic to working hard, who doesn't want to have any responsibilities, who just wants to do things the easy way and get the most out of life without having to do anything, right? Those people do exist, fair enough. But regular people like you and I, regular, well adjusted people, like sometimes that type of shit can really take it out of you. So I'm just shocked why these guys say these type of things. I don't understand why, because they know deep down that's not true. They know deep down that streaming has never made them feel as bad as working a job has made you feel. And even sometimes, I've said it before, like, I think it's actually a curse. I think it's actually it's actually a curse to be somebody that has like aspirations outside of your work. I don't think it's a good thing. Like, I think it can sometimes fuck with your head, because I don't think we're all really honest about how difficult it is to actually make it and actually be a professional, quote unquote, content creator. Not a lot of people get to do that. It's a real privileged position. It's a real rarity that people get to, you know, pay their bills, look after their family by talking shit on the internet. It's not easy to do. So the fact that you have those type of dreams sometimes can fuck with your ability to keep a real job, because you start to think about all the things that you could be doing with this time and not focusing on the work you got to do on the 9-to-5 that you're working, that's actually paying you that's actually paying your wage to keep a roof over your head. And it can actually affect your ability to work properly. And I've had that situation myself. It's only, you know, when I became a little bit older, become a bit more mature, I was able to really be honest about my situation, my position, and actually be a little bit more grown up with how I approach my jobs. But for the longest time, I was like really disrespectful to jobs I had. And the disrespect I had to jobs was really affecting my performance. And it affected my performance, would affect my ability to connect with people working there, and obviously just affect my overall mood. So I was fucking over myself, you know, two times over by having these lofty aspirations about, oh, I don't really need this job. I can get out. I can do this. Whatever. It's not a good thing. So those type of feelings, again, only come about working a dead end job, working a job you don't really want. So I don't know why people like Hassan will say this, even more so him, because allegedly, according to people online, he comes from a wealthy family anyway. So it's like, why does it even matter that you'll have this appeal? Like, why even share this if you've never really had to live or work within the real world like the rest of us? Like, why is this even important? Because I'm not somebody, I think this is a bad thing. Maybe I've been the minority here. I don't think it's a bad thing to grow up wealthy. I don't think it's a bad thing to grow up with parents that have money and the ability to basically, you know, let you take chances so you don't have to accrue debt. So you don't have to work a dead-end job. That's actually a good thing. That's a blessing. That's what your parents should want to do for you, for all the hard work they put in, right? That's one of the benefits of working really hard, is that you have the ability now to help your kids out like later on in life, because you didn't get that opportunity yourself. Cool, whatever. But I don't also understand why people that have money or that come from money try to LARP like they're not from money, or try to push away from that and then try to speak for us or speak about the regular working class experience when they've never been through it. Like, there's something to be learned or gleaned from somebody that's lived a life of affluence and privilege. You can probably learn a lot from them. You can also learn a lot from somebody that's had to graft for everything they had and have worked, you know, has been a working class, middle class type of person. But pretending you are the opposite is really bizarre, and kind of, if anything, I feel like does a disservice to your parents. It's almost like spitting in the face of your parents, all the hard work that they did, and now here you are cosplaying as some like blue collar street. It's like, what? And who even cares? Who's even keeping note about this sort of stuff? No one really. So you're kind of talking into the wind anyway. But I find it all absolutely asinine and all absolutely dumb. Anyway, Hassan did reply. So I'm going to play this clip courtesy of the Abba and Preach podcast or its channel. I recommend you check them out. They're absolutely brilliant. I'm sure most of you guys know who they are. But they played a clip where Hassan kind of replied to all the pushback he was getting. And I get the feeling that Hassan Abi is just a bit of a, he's just a bit of a cunt in it, really, unfortunately. Much as I like his streams and I like his style and stuff, I feel like as a person, he's a bit of a dickhead. Like, he's a bit of like, you can tell he's got that rich kid energy that we all don't like. There's rich kids that exist in the world who are amazing. I'm sure we've all had them, where you've gone to school with a rich kid who was just incredible, super nice, super generous, and just a chill person. But I also feel like there's that rich, bratty type of kid like Hassan, who's just, I don't know, he's just always going to be a rich brat, even though he's like an older dude now. He just still acts like a child. So maybe that's part of the reason why people dislike him and what he says and shit. But he just comes across as somebody that just doesn't get it, is really out of touch, but thinks he is in touch. It's odd. Anyway, let's play the response.
Our favorite streamers are doubling down on the Streaming is socially draining more than regular jobs. Hassan's unhappy.
I canceled on Twitter again, as always.
Oh, fuck.
This time it was for me saying that I run out of my social battery after 9.5 hours of streaming in a way that, like, a real job doesn't.
Uh-huh. Oh, God.
And everyone immediately, like,
That's dumb, though, because a real job, there's way more. This is a stupid statement. You go through way more of a social battery at a real job than ever you do streaming. I know streaming, there's a lot of demands with the live chat and interacting with that and alerts coming in, people suggesting things you should check up and stuff, and keeping an eye on the time or you're spending on each topic. I understand there's a lot going on there. But let's be real. Having to talk to your colleagues, like having to communicate with people that you work with, collaborate, blah blah blah, that social battery is like, it's non-comparable to streaming. There's no compare to it at all. Zero compare. I've seen it myself. Like, I don't even go to the office as much as I used to, right, because everybody's working from home now. But more often than not, I'm sure most of you guys in the UK who do work from home, you will know this. If you have to work one day a week from work, if you have to work one day a week in the office, you've probably noticed how much talking gets done now as opposed to before, because everybody's so excited to see each other. You haven't seen each other, you've all been at home doing your thing, and then you get into the office and it just turns into like one big chat-a-thon. And by the time you finish work, you probably, the last thing you want to do is have another conversation. So the idea that that is any way comparable to people talking to you on a live stream, which you can just ignore if you want to, right? You don't even need to read it. Whereas at work, you kind of have to answer back. You have to communicate. You have to be alert. You have to always be present. You can't go to sleep. You can't just wander off your fucking stream and just like start making food. You have to be there on the laptop talking, you know, like, come on, man. Come on, Hassan. Like, you have to be serious.
Had a real job, dumbass.
I did. I worked in sales. So it was like,
allegedly he worked in sales for 2 months. It's not the same thing. You can't compare working 2 months at a sales job and use that as a way to generalize about how much social, like, how, what experience do you have? Is that all you have? Your only experience of like social battery being drained is working one time in sales. Come on, brother.
A very social job as well, so I know exactly what, like, yeah, people pleasing looks like, and it's like being annoying and awful, right? So I was making a comparison between like my experience as a salesperson versus my experience as a Twitch streamer, and I was like, it's so soul sucking, like it's so soul crushing, and I can't socialize after that, and I feel so bad because I was talking about going to March's house. March had a housewarming party. None of you guys were invited because you're not cool.
I was invited, and I didn't remember until yesterday.
I was there, right? And I brought Kaya, and she was being the best girl. But I also felt like I was looking like an asshole to every single person because I was, like, pouting the whole time. I'm really fucking tired. I take one drink with March.
Oh, it's always the Hassan show.
I take one drink with... And I was like, I have to get the fuck out of here. Like, I'm so...
She made a good point there, though, right? He actually did think that everybody in there was noticing how... It's like, bro, like, this fucking main character energy this guy has is... Oh, God almighty.
You got hungover immediately?
Yeah, I think it's because, like, I'm f***ing tired after 9.5 hours of streaming, right? They clipped it, like, 30 seconds of it to be like, Hassan, streamer says, dumb socialist streamer says, like, fucking real jobs are way easier than streaming. And it's like, that's not what I was saying. Here's the fucking context. Nobody gives a shit. There's, like, hundreds of thousands of fucking...
It doesn't matter what the context is, though. Even the context that he's adding to it about the social battery thing, it's not true. You drain way more of your social battery working a regular job than you ever do streaming. That is categorically incorrect what he's talking about. Like, we know it. Working a regular job drains more of your social battery than streaming would ever do. Plus, streaming, you choose to do it. It's not something that you have to do. You don't have to stream. This is all just like a game privilege type of thing that we're all involved in. But it's not an obligation to stream. You don't have to do this. You do it because you want to do it. Whether you want to stream to talk to your fans, stream to make money, whatever it is, or just to lend your voice to what's happening in the culture, but it's not, you're not obliged to do it in order to actually keep you, like, it's just a nonsense topic anyway. It really is a nonsense topic.
Likes led me to actually delete Twitter. What? I deleted Twitter from my phone. Yeah, it's really important for me to have Twitter.
Imagine deleting Twitter because you're getting pushback and whatever, criticism, and people are not agreeing with the hot take that you had. That's why you delete Twitter. You can't even handle pushback. You can't handle critique. You can't handle debate. You just delete your Twitter. Is that the answer to fucking solving all your issues? Maybe don't say dumb shit. Maybe have a little bit more life experience so that you can, you know, have something interesting to say. Maybe chase that. Would that be so hard to do, by the way? If you're Hassan Abi and you're this socialist guy, why doesn't he do live streams where he goes and works at places for a number of times? Like, I don't know, like, you know, the undercover boss. Why does he do stuff like that? Why is he just sitting on his laptop talking to people and telling them how to live their lives while he's got a fucking, you know, while he's in his multi-million-dollar mansion with an amazing car outside? Why doesn't he do the whole, go all the way with this whole socialist LARP that he has going on and actually go and work a regular job to get some experience, to talk to people that work regular jobs and to actually understand what the regular people are saying, which would then, in a weird way, help his arguments politically, socially. That would actually help his debates, help his point of view. But no, here he is just like noncing about nothing.
Twitter on my phone for my job. Obviously, I need to like constantly be fucking up to date on what the fuck's going on in the world. But I feel like at this point, it's just not worth it. It's so like being on Twitter and being extremely online is literally like being in a room where you're making the dumbest people on the fucking planet yell at you nonstop.
So we're, I love this. So we're the dumb ones because we don't agree with what you said. You say streaming drains way more of your social battery than working a regular job, or that streaming is a harder job than working a regular job. We say no, because there's way more people. That's the thing as well. There's way more people on planet Earth working a regular job than there are people who make money online streaming. I guess the majority of people don't even make money streaming. The majority of people don't even make a living streaming, let alone money. So don't even make money, let alone a living. So he's sitting here acting as if like the regular people online, who amount for the majority of people in the world, who all have jobs and enjoy content online still, are the ones that are dumb and don't know what they're talking about. Cool. Great guy. Never met him.
And so you're not using Twitter ever again?
No.
He just took it off his phone.
He'll use it on his PC.
Yeah, because I need to have it for my work. But yeah, I'm not going to, because
yeah. I can't delete. That's the thing as well. I love people like this, right? They make these bold statements about deleting things and not being on here. It's like, yeah, I can't delete the whole thing, though. I can't disappear. I've got to have a social presence. I've got to get my dopamine hit from somewhere.
I was like looking at it and it was like fucking me up.
Well, yeah, you were up really late last night.
No, I went to sleep at like 11. I just woke up at 4 and I was like going through Twitter and I was just like, fuck this, dude. Like, what the fuck am I doing?
I also love the little lie. You was up late at night, weren't you? No, I went to bed at 11, but up at 4. So you was up at 4 a.m. checking Twitter. Checking all the replies and people shouting at you and feeling bad for yourself.
Good for you.
Yeah.
This is a positive step in your mental health.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wish there was a world where you could just like, quit and restart as like a VTuber and be somebody totally different. Because I feel like I've ruined so many first impressions and I've just made so many mistakes online that are just like micro.
It's so funny you say that because like you didn't.
I just wish I could start over.
You didn't, but you feel that way and it feels very real to you. But like from where I'm standing with the amount of like genuine fucking hatred and vitriol that I have, I feel like yours is because you're a woman.
Okay, whatever. I'm also really perplexed. Maybe it's just me and my tendency or just over. I think sometimes I do overcompensate sometimes and try to be like a pleaser too much. But sometimes I really do wonder, how do people who are very divisive not know why they're so unlikable? Why is that a thing? Why do guys like Hassan Abi, Hassan Pika, who's incredibly unlikable, says incredibly dumb things, not understand why people don't like him? Has no concept of it whatsoever. Just thinks everybody's dumb. Has no concept. Like, it's not, and again, it's not like it's not like you have to agree. You don't have to change your behavior based on it, but you should have an ability to understand why people don't like you. Like, just objectively, hey, why do people not like me? Objectively, I am quite unlikable. Objectively, I do have a punchable face. Objectively, I do have some crazy opinions about the world and how it should function. Objectively, I do have some dumb hot takes. Objectively, I don't have much life experiences. You know what I mean? Like, that should be a cornerstone. If you're somebody that comes from a questionable background, you should have, that should be a part of your, like, how to describe it? That should be a part of your thing. Understanding why people don't like you And then, if anything, leaning into it a bit more. That's what I would do if I was him. Understand why people don't like you, but then lean into it to kind of serve your fucking ends and shit. But for some reason, he doesn't get it. Anyway, in the long and short of it, I think most of you listening and watching will probably know that working a regular job is way harder than making content online. That's not to say making content online isn't difficult. I've long said, I think people like the Kardashians, even someone like a Kylie Jenner, I think they deserve a lot more respect for the amount of content and stuff they put up online, because it's not easy to be constantly like recording selfies of yourself, taking pictures of yourself with different outfits on, trying on different outfits, different makeup. All that stuff is exhausting. I'm sure some of you have tried it before. Like, hey, every day I'm going to take a picture of my outfit. It's not easy to do. So it's no one saying it's easy to like be a content creator, to be an influencer. We're not all saying that. It's definitely has its own difficulties that you have to kind of combat and overcome and whatever it may be. But to compare doing something that you're doing for the love, you're doing something for the passion, you're doing something because you want to share your voice, your opinion, get your whatever, your style out there, whatever it may be, something that you feel like is a calling, comparing that to working a regular job that you don't want because you're doing it to pay your bills is fucking insane. Especially if you've had to work a job like that ever in your life, even once. And again, it's not to do like a competition about who's had the worst job and stuff, but come on, bro. Come on, man. Let's be for real. Let's be for fucking real. Like, I remember there was one time in particular, talking about bad jobs actually, this one summer where I always had struggled to get jobs anyway. I was just that kid. Like, I think in general of my life, I've just been that person. I've never got things easy. Everything has always come with just hard slog. I've never once got a single opportunity just given to me. And again, I wish I had one, but I've never had. It's always been just pure sweat and hard work. One particular summer, I was finding it hard to get like a regular retail job. And at the time when we were kids, that was what you'd want. You'd want to work in like a JD Sports, a Foot Locker, a Sports Direct, so that you could get like free stuff, right? Discounted stuff. And also it was cool to work there when you were a kid. I couldn't get those jobs for love, no money, not happening. So I ended up having to do this job where essentially I was getting signups from people. Like, I was standing in like, I think it might have been like Ilford or like Barking or something, right? I was standing outside Ilford and Barking, and they had these like, you know, like a strip, like a shopping area where everyone, there's all these shops in the high street. And I was standing in like the main square getting signatures from random people. I forgot, I don't even know what it was for, but I just remember I had to do that for the weekend. I did that from maybe Friday to Saturday for like 8 hours per day, trying to get particular signups. And if I remember correctly, it was a certain number. If you didn't get a certain number, you wouldn't get the minimum pay. I'm not lying. So if you didn't get a certain number of signatures, you wouldn't get the minimum pay. Not like you wouldn't get a bonus, even the minimum, you wouldn't get it. And the reason why that was so important at that time, I think I might have been like 17 or something, that job was the job that I used to get to have, I'd wanted, obviously. And the money I got from that was what would pay for my haircut, what would pay for my outfit for the rave on the weekend, or like money in my pocket to take some girl out to cinema or some shit. So that money was important. Like, it was life or death, because I wasn't getting that at home, right? We were super broke at home. Didn't have any money at all. My parents were working super hard just to keep the lights on. So there was no extra money for me to buy trainers and shit. So I had to just get that on my own. And this is before I was into sneakers and reselling. So I didn't have no idea what I was doing. So I had to do that sign up job for like a good summer. Like, doing that job, doing sign-ups, and it was brutal, horrendous. One of the best jobs and one of the worst jobs I've ever had. Best because, obviously, you've got to be outside with your friends. You got to talk to random girls sometimes, banter with some other people. But also the worst because you are literally getting sign-ups. Like, you're literally standing there with a clipboard, and I have my little suit on, my tie. Like, just an awful, awful job. And again, the money was like, I kid you not, it might have been like 50... It might have been 50, but I think it was probably £30 a day. I'm going to say 50 to be like kind to myself, but I think it was £30 a day. I think we got like 30 or £35 a day, working 8 hours a day, standing outside, trying to get signatures. And again, if you didn't reach a certain amount of signatures, you got no money. No money, zero. So you had to get the signatures at the end. So it was absolutely horrendous. So anybody sitting there with a straight face saying, doing what I'm doing now is harder than working that job I had before, that's a bullshit. That's absolute bullshit. Really, really is. But, you know, these guys just, they have nothing to say. They want to say things. Moving on. Let's talk about this. I thought this was absolutely hilarious. So this is courtesy of New York Times. And it's an article that I've been meaning to read for a while, but I haven't got around to it. So I thought, why not talk about it with you guys live on the Flipping Podcast? So it's courtesy of New York Times. The title is, "They promoted body positivity, then they lost weight. Do plus size influencers owe their followers an explanation when their bodies change?" Now, off the basis of this, I'm sure it's going to be a topic about fat acceptance and shit, and with the fat movement and probably Ozempic and whatnot. And off the bat, I just want to say that my interpretation of fat acceptance was mostly about making it okay, making it societally okay for people to praise fat bodies, and for women, especially young girls, not to feel uncomfortable that they don't look like a model or something. I thought that was the case. I'd never thought the fat acceptance thing was, oh, let's try and convince people that being fat is better than being in shape or being healthy or being skinny. I didn't think that was the case. But I think, unfortunately, along the way, radicals within that group of people, because I think every group, every subsection, every group of people, collective, whatever it may be, has a radical element. So I think the radical element of the fat acceptance movement went all the way to the end. It's like saying, oh, being fat is okay, being fat is healthy, actually just because I'm fat doesn't mean I've got diabetes. All this sort of nonsense was getting trotted out. But I think it did a really disservice to fat acceptance, because the whole reason of fat acceptance existing was that it gave people that were fat the confidence to say, hey, I know I don't look like the conventional person, the regular person is meant to look, but it's okay for me to exist, right? I should not be panned. I should not be made to feel less than just because I'm bigger than you, kind of thing. That's obviously true, because I think a lot of the time, especially online and shit, I'm guilty of it myself. We can be extremely mean and extremely unkind to people who are fat just because they happen to be fat. And Wings of Redemption and Boogie are probably two of the people that kind of come to mind in that regard. I don't think people would be just as much as annoyed with Wings or Boogie if they weren't fat, obese, lazy pieces of shit. Do you know what I mean? But because they are, you get more annoyed by it. But I thought that was the reason why. So I'm sure it kind of got copped and moved. But I've always been fascinated with this side of things, where it becomes, you're the influencer, where your whole brand is about being fat. And the thing about it that I love personally is that it inspires a lot of people to feel comfortable in their own skin, because there's probably a lot of people out there, I think probably there's more people than not, who are fat. So you end up having this big community of people who kind of rally around you and kind of, you know, look up to you because you're kind of leading the charge. You'll have this, exude this confidence and this assuredness that they would never have, especially looking the way that they do. But then it changes over time and they lose weight. And I'm always been curious about what happens to that person after the fact, especially when their whole brand is being a fat acceptance person. So let's see what this article says. Tiana James used to love looking at photographs Dron Davis posted of herself on Instagram. Miss Davis, a plus-size model, included pictures of her upcoming model campaigns alongside selfies. For Miss James, 22, Miss Davis' feed was a revelation. I wanted to feel comfortable in my body, and she was like me in so many ways. So it made it easier to be myself. If I could find this person so beautiful, she was bigger, I could find myself beautiful too. Miss Davis gained a following through posts that criticized diet culture as she built her career as a curve model. She wore up to size 16 or double XL, most prominently for Doing, a California fashion brand known for floral pariah dresses, is typically worn by more willowy women. Willowy woman, what's that fucking mean? Her feed was running commentary on the unrealistic expectation to conform to a thin ideal. The quote, "A flat stomach won't change your life. It's exhausting being afraid and ashamed of the parts of your body." Then over the past few months, Miss Davis shrank. She still posted artsy selfies Miss James loved, but photos of soft belly rolls were replaced by sharp cheekbones and clavicles. She continued to write in her confessional style, sharing her feelings about everything from constipation to career insecurities, but Miss Davis stopped posting her habitual rant against fat phobia. And she didn't explain why or how she had lost so much weight. Uh-oh. To me, Miss James, Miss Davis' silence felt like a betrayal. It made me feel like she was being dishonest with her community. I don't want to say it was owed to us, but it was such a dramatic change. I think it is owed to you. I think people get a bit shy about saying this whole owed thing because it makes you look like a bit of a stan. But I think if the person's brand is about being fat and about that journey and about how it is to live like that, then they do owe it to their fan base to be like, hey, I'm not fat anymore and here's why. You do owe them an explanation. You do. I'm sorry. Yeah, you don't owe them an explanation. No, you do owe those people because most of those people too are the ones that have basically afforded you the lifestyle you have. This lifestyle you have where you have these cool rugs, this fancy mirror, a cute dog, plants everywhere. They afforded you that fucking lifestyle. So you owe them an explanation. Give them one. It continues. The body positivity movement has recently faltered in the cultural moment when Finn is back in again, thanks in part to the rise of the new drug like Ozempic that are used for weight loss. Celebrities, models and influencers like Miss Davis, who once celebrated their curves, exactly, are grappling with how to discuss their smaller bodies, while their followers feel as if they've abandoned the cause they've used to champion, encourage people to challenge their weight stigma and to accept themselves as they are. You know what's funny about this? The funny thing about this is that we all knew this to be true. Deep down, we all knew. The fat acceptance movement largely was a whole bunch of bullshit. I think it was good for people to make them feel comfortable, to feel confident in who they are. But this idea that being fat is okay was nonsense. We all know that's not the case. Most of us would love to be like 20 to 30 pounds lighter than what we are, especially if we're a bit bigger. And usually, I've always said personally, men and women personally, I'm going to revise my opinion. I've always said men and women, you probably go a long way to improve your attractiveness, your ability to wear nicer clothes, your confidence, if you actually went and lost 10 to 20 pounds. Forget 30. Losing 10 to 20 pounds can do way more for your mental health, for your confidence, for your assuredness, for your sense of self, for your wardrobe, than any amount of books or whatever else can do for you. I swear to God it can. But obviously it's hard to do. It's hard to diet. It's hard to work out. It's hard to be consistent with those type of things. Like, it's just difficult to do. So when a new drug comes along that says, hey, use this 3 times a week and you're going to look the best you've ever looked, everyone's going to run to it. But this is one of those things that I never would have anticipated with Ozempic. It's one of those unintended consequences. Ozempic comes around and it suddenly decimates the fat acceptance movement, because now all these fatties who were talking about how fat is beautiful, they were only saying that because they were actually too lazy to get on a treadmill. They were too lazy to not put down the fucking croissants and shit. And now that they have the ability to do so, or now they have the ability to lose the weight and it's easy, all it takes is literally injecting themselves in the stomach, anybody can do that. Suddenly now, you know, this whole fucking fat acceptance thing is gone, which is a real shame, because I feel like if you're really about that life, you should ride it until the fucking wheels fall off. Do you know what I mean? Ozempic or not. Let's continue. This is the drum. This is that woman, right? Cool. Miss Davis said that she had long agonized over how to publicly address her weight loss. Yeah, that's a hard one. To be fair, I have sympathy for her. If you are a fat influencer, how do you talk about this? If you're a fat influencer, how do you speak about this? Like, without sounding patronizing, without being insulting, also without feeling like you're overly explaining yourself, you know? Because that's something people don't like to do. Even though I feel like you should. If you're a content creator, if you're a public figure and people come to you for a certain opinion, for a certain point of view, you champion a particular way of life and you change it, you owe it to your fans to tell them why. You do. I don't give a fuck. You owe it to your fans. But it can be hard where to start. I think just getting on front of the camera and be like, hey guys, it's me again, and doing the whole YouTuber sigh, that would definitely help. But yeah, this is an amazing article. Despite what some of her followers suspected, she wasn't on Ozempic. Yeah, right. The truth that she had relapsed into disordered eating practices that she had struggled with throughout her life was hard for her to admit, even to herself. How had she succumbed to the same pressures she had warned her nearly 100,000 followers about? So she's trying to say she's not Ozempic. She's actually got an eating disorder. Come on, girl. Come on. What's your eating disorder? Eating too much? Let's be real. The only thing that people are going to be okay with is a very detailed explanation. Yes, you owe it to them. which is not something I can write in a caption. Oh, suddenly you can't write it. Look at this girl. 23-year-old said by Zoom from her bedroom in the woods in Mendocino, California. Mendocino, where she lives with her mother. She didn't want to beat herself up over fully relapsing, but she also emphasized to her followers like Miss James. But she emphasized, she emphasized with her followers. I gather all these women to follow me because I'm going to be inspiring, make them feel empowered. How can I still expect their attention and support? Miss Davis grew up in a small town in Northern California. She put herself up on a diet by the time she was 10. After she began to develop breasts, her weight fluctuated. But when she was thinner, she said she could fit into Abercrombie miniskirts that her friends wore, and teachers took her more seriously. What? This is definitely California brain. She's saying that she used to fit into this is kind of like, I guess, something to like brag about. I used to fit into Abercrombie miniskirts. And then she's saying that how her teachers took her more seriously when she was skinny because she wore Abercrombie miniskirts. What, you mean your male teachers went to fuck you? What are you talking about here? Huh? She was discovered through her Instagram shortly after she graduated from high school and soon landed a job at Doyne's First Curve Model. She has since modeled for much bigger brands, including Levi's, Sephora, and The North Face. Much bigger brands, lols. She became a female fixture at Doyne's website, and designers have called for her longtime muse and named the pair of jeans that came in extended... No, I don't want that. I'm sorry. Designers have called her their longtime muse and named a pair of jeans that came in extended sizes after her. Don't you dare name an extendo pair of jeans after me. Don't name the gargantuan denims right after me, mate. Don't name the fucking, you know, the gorilla denims after me. Don't name the fucking lorry truck denims after me, bro. You know what I mean? Fuck off, mate. Or the fucking white van denims after me. Extended van, yeah, horrible. As Miss Davis grew up online, it felt natural to post about all the facets of her life. Not that she was not just modeling, but her racial justice activism, her artwork, her evolving relationship with her body. These terms, man. Evolving relationship with her body. What does that even mean? Evolving relationship to her body. Anyway, looking back, she said, in her passion to share her own learning process, she unintentionally positioned herself as an expert on body It was all a mistake. She unintentionally positioned herself as an expert on body acceptance when that was not the case. It was a humbling experience and part of the reason that she's not yet broached her weight loss publicly. I'm scared of being judged or yelled at or letting people down, which is ironic because I think my silence is letting people down more than me talking about it. Exactly. Some of the comments, let me just see, who's this Miss? I want to see what she looks like. Miss Davis, fat acceptance. Let's see what her fucking Instagram looks like. I'm actually curious to see what did she look like in the past. How fat was she really? What's her actual name? What is her name? Miss Davis. I wanna know what her fucking name is. That's what I wanna know. What's her actual name here? Let's see if I can find it. What's her name? Oh, there it is. That's Instagram. Is that her or is that somebody else? Oh, no, that's Doreen. Let's see if we can find this. I really want to see what this is all about. Let's see what she actually looked like. Like, how fat was she really? Because I think they're making a big deal out of this, but I don't know if she was actually that chunky. Let's see. It's loading here. Bear with me a second as we get this to load up, because I'm really curious to see how chunky was this young lady. Was she big or big? Let's see. This is the one, right? Is that her? Is that what her name is, right? Shop ARQ. So if you want to find herself on thingy. Oh, that's not her. Is that her? That can't be her. That also can't be her. Who the hell is this? This is somebody else. I don't know who the hell this person is, but that can't be her. And I don't think that Droney account is her either. This looks like a brand. Huh. I mean, no, that is her. Okay, this is the girl. Okay, cool. This is her because she's lost the weight. So let's see what she looks like when she was a bit more chunky. Let's see. I'm curious to see what she ended up looking like. Because she definitely looks a lot skinnier now. She definitely, yeah. There's a lot more pictures of her and her face. She's giving loads of face pictures here. Loads of face. Jesus Christ, how many pictures does she have of herself? Fucking hell. This is what it's like to be an influencer, isn't it? You just have to be addicted to taking selfies. Like, look how many pictures she has of herself. Like, it just doesn't stop. God damn. He just keeps going. Pictures of herself, me. Look, how many of these has she got where she's kind of looking up, like, with a little mouth thing going on? She's got so many of those pictures of herself, like, from looking upwise. Is that a bigger note? She's been skinny for a while, though. What's this article talking about? I don't really see her being fat anywhere here. Where was this fat influencer? I don't see her. I just see, like, a really arty, skinny girl. Okay, maybe it's here. Maybe a little bit there. Still not really. Maybe she deleted it. That would be funny. Maybe she deleted all her pictures when she was fat. Maybe she deleted every single picture of herself when she was fat. This is incredible. She was a fat acceptance person, and then she had an eating disorder, also known as Ozempic, and then suddenly she went through her entire Instagram and deleted all the pictures of herself when she was fat. Yeah, there's not a single one of her fat. I can't see one picture of her fat. Or is this the New York Times being liberal with fat acceptance because her BMI is high or something? Because she doesn't look fat to me. This is not a fat girl to me in the slightest, so I don't know what they're talking about here. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Let's go back to the article. Fuck all this shit. I think that's her there, though, to be fair. That is actually her there. That's what she used to look like there, actually. So she definitely went for Instagram and took everything off, but I don't know, you know? If I'm a fat girl, I wouldn't look at her as an example or as a role model because she doesn't even look that fat. She just looks like a cute girl that was got a bit chubby. You know, like a girl that got in a relationship. That's what she looks like. She doesn't look like a person that's been like morbidly obese her entire life, you know? You can tell a girl who's been like morbidly obese from when she was 9 as opposed to a girl who just got, you know, happy fat. She got a new boyfriend, maybe got a new job, maybe living at home now. Like, you know, that's what she looks. She doesn't even look that, you know? She doesn't even look like gross, you know? You know what I mean? You guys know what I mean. Anyway, let's see. Some of the people who left comments on Miss Davis' Instagram about her body were kind. Worried about you. Hope you're okay. This sort of rapid and continued weight loss is concerning, someone said. Another one said, sickly skinny. These are all hate. By the way, these are all jealous haters. These are all jealous fucking haters. Most people in the comments would love it, would die if they could fucking look like this one day in their life. One day. They would absolutely faint if they could look like this. One day. So then people talking about it, so like, I'm definitely fucking jealous. I figure it must be Ozempic like everybody else. She doesn't want to talk about it, which is a little off brand because she's so open about everything else. That comment told New York Times that she loved Miss Davis regardless of her size, but still expected answers. She talks about everything. Every pimple she has on her face, every rash she gets on her arm. So why hasn't she mentioned this? She completely altered her body and she won't cop to it. I love this. I love how fucking demanding and entitled people are. But again, I think they are deserving of an explanation because this girl went from looking like above to looking like this. Do you know what I mean? Like, come on, man. You have to explain what's going on. Explain to us what's going on, lad. Come on. Explain. You're giving collarbone and shit. Come on, man. You got to explain what's the deal here. You can't just be acting like nothing's happening. Do you know what I mean? Like, come on, man. She went from looking like what? She went from looking like this to this. Come on. She has to explain. I really do sympathize with these kids. I'm not going to lie. She's got to talk about it. She has to talk about it. She can't pretend like nothing's happening and it's all good. Nah, bitch. You got to talk about that shit. Like, look, she went, look what she looks like now. Look. From this to this. You gotta talk about it, girl. You gotta talk about it. She completely altered her body and she won't cop to it, said another Instagram follower in an interview. She purchased Doreen items because Miss Davis modeled them, including her namesake jeans. If you're going to go out there using your body to make a living and position yourself as a brand and then walk away from your brand, I think you can't expect the community around you not to react. I definitely agree. Right now, body positivity influencers who've decided to be open about losing weight have also had to navigate community that's often disappointed and angry. The plus size influencer, Rosie Blair, who's taking Monjaro, what the fuck is Monjaro, seemed defiant when she posted. Full transparency, I have zero remorse or shame for being public about my weight loss. 2 years ago, I couldn't wipe my own ass. Jesus Christ. I couldn't wipe my own ass. Critics called her ableist and self-hating. I left body positivity community because I wanted to be defined by the interest outside of my body. To be fair, that is a good point to make. Like, being an influencer, that's, even if you're skinny, making your influence just about your body is a bit odd, isn't it? Like, it's strange, especially if you don't, like, a fitness person. You're just somebody that's like, oh, look, here's my flat stomach. Here's my elbows. Here's my knees. Like, it's a bit strange. There should be more to you than that. Like, you're not even into coffee. Anyway, one creator posted a how-to guide for followers who are wrestling with the reaction of posting. Oh, no. One creator posted a how-to guide for followers who were wrestling with their reaction to people losing weight. So your favorite fat creator doesn't want to be fat anymore. Here are 6 mind step tips to process your journey in self-loving the way, honestly. If my kid, I hope if I do ever do have kids that they're not this redacted and they're not this soft. Because imagine your whole life being thrown off kilter because your favorite influencer decided to fucking start doing some sit-ups. Imagine if that was your kid. I'd feel so ashamed. I'd be so embarrassed if my kid's whole day, week, life was ruined. Because it's like, come on. I know it's disappointing. I get it, because you look up to people. But it's not that deep. Like, you have to relax. So here's the steps. If you are a fan of a fat influencer and you're finding it hard to deal with their weight loss, here's some steps that you can help yourself with, right? Courtesy of Sarah Sapora. So let's see what the steps are. What are the steps? Show me these fucking steps. Let's see what they are. Actually, let me post. Oops, is it posting? Come on, bro. Let me see the steps. I wanna see the steps. Let's see what they're saying here. Let's see. Okay, why did it move away from again? Oh man, I have to find it all over again. God damn. There you go. So if your fat influencer doesn't want, yeah, there you go. So this is a real fat girl too, by the way. This is a real fatty, right? This lady here is a real fatty. So if you're somebody that got duped by this one, then that's your own fault, because this lady is just somebody that, look, she got a new boyfriend, she got a new job, she moved back home. This just looks like happy fat. This is like a real, like, she's been fat since she was like 2 years old. You know what I mean? This is somebody you should be listening to be fair. But hey, what do I know? Let's see what she's talking about here, Miss Sarah. Let's see what her tips are. The rise of GLPs has made the process of weight loss easier and more accessible for many people. This means in general, we are seeing more and more creators who gained recognition for loving their fat bodies, suddenly demonstrating their desire to change or showing off their change. Every person has the right to want to lose weight or to change their body, but in this case, it can feel super emotional for the community that follows them. Big disclaimer, I support someone's desire to weight loss. Okay, cool. One, their journey has 100% nothing to do with you. You also have no idea what their lived experience is, and even if you did, that's their choice. I agree with that. That's good advice. Two, it feels really icky if you think their voice has been disingenuous, stop listening to them. I like that. That's my favorite advice. If it feels really icky and you feel like their voice has been disingenuous, stop listening. Exactly. Vote with your fucking feet. Vote with your follows. 3. Not every community leader has their shit together. Don't assume just because they have a large platform that their words are aligned and helpful. I like this girl. This is fucking good advice. I'm not going to lie. 4. Yes, some folks may have used their fat identity to get popular and are now abandoning ship. That sucks. But sometimes people suck. Let them. Yo. This Sarah woman is banging. I'm going to like this. I love all of this shit. She's spitting some facts here. Let me like that shit. Big up, Sarah. 5. Focus on you. Love it. And the subtext here. Parasocial relationships feel consuming, but you can learn from them to help you figure out your own values. Relationships change, both in real life and online. Change is data, and it gives you permission to learn yourself. I love this. Or to better learn yourself, sorry. 6. Relationships are built on agreements. When someone changes their agreement, you are empowered to end relationship. I love this. Really, really banging advice from her. I love all of that stuff. But again, I'd be depressed and annoyed and pissed off if my child was that fucking fragile that they needed six steps to kind of wane them off their favorite influencer because they decided to put down a croissant. That would hurt me. The longtime curve model Gabriella Lascano filmed a TikTok video last year about her decision to lose weight, explaining that she felt guilty for being a part of the body positivity movement. Let's see what this woman looks like. Longtime curve model. Who does this person? Let's see what Gabriella Lascano looks like. Oh, so she's now skinny. Let's see what she looks like, because that's a big girl. What's her weight loss journey look like? Because that's a big woman. What does she look like now? Where's the weight loss? I don't see no weight loss here. Not sure about that one, mate. I'm not sure Gabriella's been sticking to the program. I don't think she's been sticking to the program. Let's check her Instagram. I don't think she's been sticking to the program. I don't see much change here. Oh, no, I do see a change. Yeah, she's definitely smaller here, to be fair. Yeah, she's definitely smaller. Let me take that back. She definitely looks a lot smaller here, to be fair to her. Fair play, fair play. She's already quite short anyway. I think when you're a woman and you're super short and you're super fat, it just looks crazy anyway. So she probably, you know, owe it to herself to lose a couple of LBs. But she definitely does look a lot smaller there than the pictures I showed earlier, because she's definitely a lot smaller. You can tell even from here. Look, even the arms. Fuck, man. Ozempic works, isn't it? Ozempic fucking works, because this lady was huge. Oh, of course she's married. Of course she's married to a black guy. Of course she's married to a black guy. Of course she's married to a black guy. Who would have guessed it, eh? She's like, how did you know I had a black husband? It's like, girl, come on. Big up Gabriella though. Big up Gabriella, because she was huge before and she's definitely lost a lot of weight now. So big up her. Let's go back to the article. Gabriella Lascano filmed a TikTok last year saying about she felt guilty about being about the body positive movement. She told the Times that she hadn't been honest about the trials and tribulations of gaining weight and getting older. People accused her of equating thinness with health and producing content that could be used as justifying fat phobia. The outrage was so intense that she removed the video. Wow. I think it's strange to be hurt when somebody chooses something for themselves, Ms. Lascano said, but influencers' personal choices affect the community they've cultivated, often leaving followers, especially vulnerable young people, feeling disillusioned and adrift. Those who appear to flip-flop can cause intense feelings of betrayal, said Sally A. Tiran, a clinical psychologist and professor, whatever. If you're going to put yourself out there and if you're going to earn money, then you're positioning yourself as a leader in this domain and you should take responsibility for your repercussions. Exactly. That I don't understand why people run away from it. People want to be thought leaders. They want to be hot take McGeesters, but then when people pull up, you know, call them out for it, suddenly it's like, oh, don't take me seriously. I'm just a young little girl. It continues. On a recent episode of Burnt Toast podcast covering the rise of fat influencers losing weight, Virginia Saul-Smith, a journalist who writes diet culture and who has also contributed to the Times, said that the influencers who once promoted fat acceptance now claim that they feel healthier when they are thinner are throwing everyone else under the bus. They're only saying this because they were all, this is the truth. No one wants to say this. They were all too lazy to work out. It was easier just to eat and be fat. That's the easiest thing to do. We can all do that. We can all just sit around and eat a copious amount of food and be fat. We can all do it. It's easy to do. But to actually be disciplined enough to work out hard and to eat healthily, that's the hard thing to do. And most people don't want to do that. And now that we've got a drug that eliminates any amount of work, any amount of effort, of course everyone's jumping on it, especially these fatties. You use the hashtag in order to grow your following, in order to post your affiliate links, get your sponsor deals, all of that, Ms. Saul Smith said. So now that you're basically telling us that you're co-opted all this rhetoric and you don't believe it all and it's all pretty gross, which is true. Because most people, that's the thing that I've learned, and I think I've been very honest with myself when it comes to fucking content creation. I'm full of shit. I think I'm very aware I'm full of shit, but I'm also I also enjoy calling out other people's talking shit, you know? Like, I know I'm full of shit, but it doesn't mean that I don't then enjoy talking about other people, calling them out on their bullshit. But I think most people, for some reason, I don't know why, I think the power of the microphone just makes them feel as if like, oh, I have the microphone, or I'm automatically speaking truth, or I'm speaking truth to power. It's like, no, most of the time we're all talking our ass. Most of the time we all can be bought and sold easily. But knowing that and being aware of that is the win in itself, really. But again, I could be wrong. Her co-host, Corinne Fay, said that she thought that it was better for influencers to be upfront if they were using weight loss drugs instead of vaguely claiming to be pursuing health. They don't want to call it a diet, so it's called a health and fitness journey. That's pretty exasperating. Last bit, I think. Few people, if any, become body positivity proponents without struggling with the same societal standards they speak out against. I've seen creators say things like, it's just too hard. Life is too hard in this body, said Katie Storino, a body acceptance advocate. It can feel like betrayal, but it's a symptom of our culture and how our society is still the worst thing to be fat. People are still terrified of being a bigger body. I think that should still be the case, though. I think largely we should all still be in a situation where we should all live in a world where being fat isn't glorified to the point where it's accepted as if like that's a good thing. You should strive to be healthy. You know, you should strive to be as, I won't say thin, as small as you can be. I think for the most part, most of you would feel, especially women, like when it comes to clothes and stuff, like there's just certain things you just completely ice yourself out of because of your bigger body. And if you can, through some effort and through some hard work, you know, make yourself smaller, then why not? Why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you give yourself that grace? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm mistaken. There are some people like this girl here. She doesn't look like, again, she doesn't look super fat, and she does look like she's kind of what people would term to be big boned. Like, she looks really tall as well, to be fair. She might be like, you know, she looks kind of tall, big girl. So maybe it's a bit more harder for her to kind of, you know, get around the whole idea of being smaller because her frame is always going to be a particular size. But I don't know. I find this stuff sad, you know, I'm not gonna lie. I find this stuff sad when they do these side by sides with like a fat person doing like a similar style of what Taylor Swift wore and doing it a fat way. I find that stuff really depressing, I'm not gonna lie. I see those pictures a lot sometimes, I'm like, oh. Anyway, it can feel like Miss Davis acknowledged that with her weight loss came affirmation, more party invitations. Wow, more attention from men. That's what women really want, isn't it? That's what they really want, isn't it? More attention from men. Oh, that's the truth of the matter, isn't it? Miss Davis acknowledged that with her weight loss came affirmations, more party invitations, more attention from men. I so badly want to be like, what you look like don't matter, but it sure does change how people treat you. That is never been more truer words said there, Miss Young Lady. What you look like doesn't matter, but it sure does change how people treat you. Hear he. So, really recommend you check it out. It's a really fun little article here. It's titled, They Promoted Body Positivity, Then They Lost Weight. I'm going to actually link to it in the flipping stream chat so you can check it yourself, but I'm also going to add it in the description for those of you that want to see it. But it's a really fun article, really, really interesting, loads of interesting little insights there to check out. So definitely make sure you do if you're that way inclined. Definitely make sure you do if you're that way inclined. Next on the list, let's talk about this quickly. I'm a big fan of this. I know some of you aren't, but I think Tremaine Emery has been getting a lot of unfair stick online. A lot of people kind of, you know, wanting to kick him while he's down. And I think just in general, maybe because of the whole Supreme thing with the whole, you know, calling Supreme, what you call it? What did he term Supreme as? Did he say it's a white supremacy? Whatever. He didn't have a lot of nice words to say about Supreme because they wouldn't let him do some very racy t-shirts with a particular artist that he wanted to work with. And he felt as if they were silencing him because he was black. He kind of pointed out that a lot of the C-suite executive people that work at Supreme were all white, despite the store being full of people from all around the world, from all over the world. And it being a brand that really did promote like multiculturalism and black voices and all this malarkey. He kind of felt like he was sold a bit of a dream. And he had a bug to bear about it. He spoke about it really, really, you know, really boldly, really confidently, even though I didn't agree with a lot of things he said. You kind of respect him for kind of standing in that position, especially when you consider the prestige of that job, the salary involved, the fact that he would completely burn that all to the ground because he felt like it didn't align with his political, societal point of view, does go I think it is a credit to him, to be fair. I think a lot of people talk a lot of shit, but don't really stand on their shit. He was willing to risk his job, risk his reputation to stand up for what he believes in. Even though I don't agree with anything he says, you have to give him credit for that. Well, people are now more upset about this. He put out his recent collection for spring, summer 2024. The title of it is called Kiss My Grits. And people are upset that he decided to make beanies with like watermelon prints on them. And I guess a necklace that features chicken bones, which is, I guess, has racial connotations over there in America, I'm assuming. I think in the UK, when I think of chicken bone necklaces, I just think of voodoo. To be fair, so I wouldn't wear that anyway, because imagine if I wore a chicken bone necklace and I went back home to see my parents, legitimately, I think they might sign me up for an exorcism. I think they might sign me up for an exorcism. They might throw a knife on my head. They might douse me in olive oil. Like, it would not be fun. Like, I could not do it. But I understand that Tremaine has billed Denim Tears as a brand that talks about the black experience, slavery and shit. That's what he wants to do with the brand. I think it's been very evident for the moment he created that cotton reef, you know, pattern, right? Even though it's been fucking bastardized and become like a trend thing, it's a very powerful message behind that cotton reef hoodie, right? Behind that cotton reef pattern. But it's kind of now become just something that people just wear without even thinking much about it. But the whole brand is very racially charged. So I'm not really surprised that he would do what he's doing now. I just think it's interesting from a design point of view how it's going to be interpreted by kids who just want to wear the cotton reef shit. Like, how do you get like little white kids, little Asian kids, little Arab kids, you know, to confidently wear this stuff that's like really un-black and un-proud, fist in the air, kind of, you know, proclaiming it from the rooftops. Like, that's an interesting design proposition. Like, how do you get those kids that just went away and start to be trendy also begin to wear like a black Jesus shirt and stuff? You know what I mean? That's the kind of function. But I really like the designs, I'm not gonna lie. I'm not even gonna sugarcoat it. I like the designs. A particular design here we have this leather shirt, is it jacket? It said Red Guts leathered car jacket is beautiful personally for me. I'm also a big fan of this watermelon print leather pouch. I think this is done, one of them is done in collaboration with Comme des Garçons, which is really cool that, you know, he's such a young brand to already have a collaboration with fucking Comme des Garçons is fucking an amazing you know, validation, an amazing kind of nod that he's going in the right direction, because Ray Kawakubo and that whole group of people don't really fuck around and don't really kind of, you know, stamp and approve anyone. So the fact that he got that kind of recognition and stamp of approval says that he's obviously doing things the right way, and obviously has his head on the right shoulders, or his head screwed on properly. But I really love this watermelon print little pouch thing. I'm not gonna lie, I really do like it. Continuing on, we've also got another t-shirt here featuring a fruit collage t-shirt. Then we've got the aforementioned handmade chicken bone necklace that all the people are going crazy about. Again, like I said, I'm not really familiar with a lot of the race stuff happening in America and stuff. I'm sure this has different connotation, but again, for me, just being a regular fucking African dude that lives in fucking London and the experience that we have with chicken bones, it's mostly a voodoo shit. So a lot of people probably wouldn't be down with it just because of the voodoo connotation, black magic connotations around it. But maybe in America, this chicken bone thing is more of a triggered race thing that kind of makes you think less of yourself. I don't know. Whatever it is, I think the fucking necklace is still hard. I wouldn't personally wear it myself, but I don't really mind it too tough. There's also a Rin denim. There's a fruit collage hoodie here with loads of different bits of fruit all over the hoodie that I'm a big fan of. Another chicken bone necklace look as well that people are going fucking crazy about, right? Again, I fucking love it personally. Again, if you got a brand called Denim Tears, that's about the, what's the label say? Is it about the black diaspora? And I think it's, again, it's about the black experience, slavery and shit. That's basically what his brand's about. It's about slavery. It's fucking wild to think there's somebody out there that has a streetwear brand / fashion brand that is based on slavery. It's kind of wild. But when you kind of go, you know, when you kind of peel the onion layers and you kind of get into it a bit, you know, you kind of go meta for meta, it kind of does start to make a lot of sense, especially when you start thinking about how cotton is produced with that malarkey. It starts to become a little bit more, you know what I mean? Hold us a bit more of his weight. You got this KMG gingham button. I love this, actually. I also love that hat. That felt hat is absolutely banging as well. There's also a bit of a rope chain thing going on here, which I've also loved the look at. I'm not going to lie. The models look really cool too, by the way. There's a chicken bone thermal. Oh, look at that. Kiss My Grits. That almost looks like a wolf, innit? I love that. It's like a Kiss My Grits to the back. But when you zoom out, it looks like a wolf a little bit, doesn't it? It looks a little bit like a wolf. I love the look of that. Also got the socks as well. The signature denim tier socks in that flip of the American flag. You've also got this Harlem, Georgia Okras baseball jersey. There's an Okra baseball jersey. That's fucking cool. I don't know why people are so like pissed off about this shit. He's got Okra on a baseball jersey. That's fucking cool. Harlem, the Harlem, Georgia Okras baseball jersey. That's freaking cool. I'm not going to lie. I'd wear that. You've got Okra sweatpants there. You got a silk velour seasoning. There's a seasoning shirt. That's, come on. This is hard. And even that hat. I'd wear the fuck out of that hat. That hat is fucking hard. That hat is absolutely banging. It's got this really massive bulbous bit on the outside, right? It's almost like a, what do you call it? A hat, like a dreadhead would wear. But then it's got this really cool bump at the top as well, which I also like. And you got the shirt again. If Our Legacy did this, everybody will be fucking wanking over it. Do you know what I mean? That's the thing I don't like as well when it comes to fashion and streetwear and shit. If Our Legacy did this, if Acne did this, everybody would be jacking off underneath their table. Do you know what I mean? But because it's somebody that doesn't look like a conventional designer, everybody's fucking got their fucking knickers in a twist. There's silk velour seasoning shirt. There's a hand printed picnic table shirt. There's a giant fruit tee, which I love again. Oh, that's one of my favorite looks. I'd wear this head to toe. This is me all day. Hand-printed plaid 501. There's a hand-printed plaid 501 in the pattern of like a typical, like, you know, garden kitchen table thing, right? With the red and white crosses. And then there's this great leather waistcoat, brown, that's crinkled and burned and dyed in different places, and a crisp white tee. And then you've got the denim tiers belt with the DT on it. And you've also got the shoes. Are the shoes part of the collection? Are they a collaboration? They've got these Oxford Brogue type style shoes. I'd wear the fuck out of that look. That is me to a T. That is so hard. And you've also got a fruit collage and button up, which I also love. You've got the chicken bone sweatpants and hoodie. You've got a red guts leather jacket, car jacket. You've got a polenta fancy grits t-shirt. I love this, all this stuff. It's fun. And then I think this is one people really got pissed off about. The watermelon t-shirt. To be fair, I'd wear the fuck out of the watermelon t-shirt. Give me a watermelon t-shirt. Give me a grape soda hoodie. Give me a leather jacket with a chicken wing on the back of it. You know what I mean? Like, give me a fucking macaroni and cheese fucking pattern, you know, denim suit or something. And or maybe change the cotton reefs and make it all macaroni and cheese, right? I'd fucking wear the fuck out of that. Why not, man? We all know Wagwan, innit? We all know we love fucking watermelon. Why are we acting like you don't like watermelon? You don't want to see watermelon in your t-shirt? Come on, man. Have some fun. Be a bit fun. Stop being fucking uptight. We got a Baroque still fruit painting hoodie as well. That was pretty cool. With smatching sweatpants as well. I love the look of that. You got fruit collage baseball tee and a KMG Gingham XL tote bag. And then you've also got the last one, red mohair sweater. So personally, I love it. I love everything I've seen. But people on social media weren't too happy. So let's actually see what the reaction with people on social media. So the first post here, you got the inside look on the Denim Tears Comme des Garçons watermelon wallet. Personally, I love it. As you can see from the video, it features the watermelon print on the outside. And when you open it, it's got the watermelon seeds on the inside. One person here says, LMAO, in my mind, Denim Tears is designed by Jonathan Majors. In my mind, for every raccoon ass look. Okay. Jonathan Majors designed it. It's fucking hilarious. Bootleg Denim Tears dress. Denim Tears 6 months insanity run is over. All I can think of when I see Denim Tears drop, they got a, you know, whatever his name is. Another person says the collection is fire. This dancers person says Denim Tears doing art. I hate people that write like this, isn't it? Is this dyslexia? Why do people write this on Twitter? I wonder if this is dyslexia. One piece in the collection that, yes, has a watermelon shirt, fire, but nobody buys weird accessories like that, and whomever does it is into art. This imagery is always an art of his work. Do art that... anyway, it's too much. I can't read that. This guy talks like he's fucking... He's been hit by lightning. Another person. What the hell is wrong with you, Denim Tears? Chicken bone necklaces? Everyone going crazy. Another one. What people are saying here. Big bro until you say no. Okay, but I don't know what that means. Cryptic post from him. What more? Any more Denim Tears posts from... Let's see what everyone else says here. I hate that cunt. Oh, another person says here about Tremaine. I hate that cunt ass nigga Tremaine. I just now found out he created Denim Tears. He's a menace to the black community. Who knew just making some, you know, some fly ass clothes for your fly ass customers? Do you need a new creative director's fucking, that's brutal. Who knew that would cause so much fucking issues? People are really sensitive about this shit, innit? Let's see the chicken bone shit. Let's see what they said here in the chicken bone shit. I had to come to see this foolishness with my own eyes. Supreme dodged the bullet. Slow down dropping all this bullshit. Oh, that's a Young Thug meme. By the way, you know that Young Thug meme where he says slow down all that bullshit you're dropping? You know, all this time, I thought it was, who did we think it was? We thought it was, I forgot, but it's been revealed that it was actually Future he was talking about. He was talking about Future. All that time when he said, boys, slow down dropping all that bullshit. I think most of us thought it was like Rich Homie Quan or somebody, but it was actually Future he was talking about. Crazy. This is hard. Unmanufactured this. Can't wait for this to drop. You got the laughing emoji there from the Boondocks. Negroes and chicken bones, LOL. Yes, this is ass. They saw your pants. Okay, cool. To be fair, though, I've said it before. I would love to get like a coin purse made out of a chicken wing. Like, imagine if you did a coin purse with Comme des Garçons that was done in the shape of a chicken wing. I'd love that. Or in a chicken nugget. Like, give it to me. Give it to me, please. Fiesta gets snapped. What is what's saying here? I got to look into Tremaine's philosophy behind Denim Tears because it's almost like he's allergic to nuance. But the intention doesn't translate beyond a limited understanding of stereotypes and old perceptions. It doesn't really imagine a way forward. There's no way forward, man. You're just making fucking clothes, man. These people who think you're going to be able to transmute so much depth and meaning into fucking garments is fucking annoying. It's just fucking clothes. Like, honestly, everybody give their head a wobble. Everybody relax. Everybody chill out. Let the guy make his clothes. The people that like to wear those type of clothes will wear them. Like I said, I think personally centering your brand on racism and slavery is fucking insane. He does it. He's clearly doing something right because the man's a multi-millionaire. So clearly people love what he's doing. You know, rock with it until you rock with it and then keep moving. Not that big deal. And then the last one here, Denim Tears is so fucking ass. Personally, I love it. I can't wait to see when it drops, actually. Is there a date for when it's actually meant to be dropping? I don't actually know. Let's check the last post here. No date yet when it's going to drop. But I am liking what I'm seeing. I'm seeing what I'm like. And hopefully when it does drop, I will get some of it myself. Personally, I'd love that red leather jacket. I love this entire look with the chicken bones, necklace included. I love that shirt. The cut of those pants also on this shirt look is absolutely great. I'm not going to lie. The cut on these black pants is fucking stupendous. So I love the foot look of that. And I'd also like this look in particular. This is me to a T. This look there, I'd wear the fuck out of this look in its entirety. That is hard. That brown vest, those big in buttons, oh, the crinkled nature of it, the belt, the pants, all look superb. So big up Tremaine. I like it personally. I think people are getting knickers of it in a twist over absolutely nothing. And I hope this drops very, very soon. Anyways, my friends, that has been 752 of the Agostino Zynga Show with I, your host, Agostino Zynga. I hope you've enjoyed this lovely, lovely podcast that we've had today. Hopefully you've had a good time. Hopefully you've enjoyed what I've spoken about. And if you had, please make sure that you let me know by contacting me via the links in the description down below. You can find them there. That'd be much appreciated. Of course, as per usual, I'll play for you today my tune of the day. So if you're checking out the pod and you're listening or you're watching via the YouTube side of things, my tune of the day is Playboi Carti Punk Monk. If you're listening, you'll hear Playboi Carti Punk Monk playing underneath my voice, and we'll talk again very, very soon. But until next time, see you again, and thank you for hanging out. For those of you wondering, random show, by the way, Jordan Reyes, see you, PT and a few others. Next random show is tomorrow. Next random show is tomorrow, so tune in tomorrow. Random show happening, episode number 200, big celebration. So tune in tomorrow for 200 of random show. There should be a link already on my thing. I should have a link already on the channel. If you haven't checked it out, please do. There should be a link already there. of the up and coming show. If you haven't seen it already, I'm gonna actually put it on the chat as well, so you can see it. But there should be a link there. I'm gonna put it in the chat now for those of you watching live, so you have it. But this is the link for the episode 200. So definitely make sure you check that out. Episode 200 of the show will be there. And I'll see you guys again very, very soon. For now, take care, people. Bye.
Turn me into a